Hi everyone, welcome to STEP's audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEP's events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enerami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Well, Ray, it's been fantastic to be here. Of course, there is a minor time zone difference between Silicon Valley and Dubai.
Just minor.
So it's, you know, past midnight for me in the West Coast, but I'm excited to be here so that energy will power me through. And it's just been fantastic getting to meet people and see how much dynamism there is here.
Have you had a chance to meet some of the startups and the founders around here? Any first impressions that you've gotten from the ecosystem coming from Silicon Valley?
Well, you know, of course, what I think is most interesting about the ecosystem here is it's actually developed in so many different ways. There are so many different kinds of startups I've met. I've met consumer startups, B2B startups, deep tech startups. For the ecosystem and its size, it's really diverse.
Yeah, we have two full days with a lot going on here. Very excited for your keynote, as a lot of people in the audience, and really looking forward to it. So thanks again for coming all the way and bearing the jet lag for the week. By the time you have to go back, you'll have to deal with the jet lag going there. We appreciate you being here, and great to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Ray.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I get to leave the stage now, right? Oh, wait, no, I actually have to give a talk. All right, so I will try to go relatively quickly because I know everyone is waiting for lunch. So what I'm going to do today is to talk a little bit about blitzscaling, because that's a favorite topic of mine, but also about artificial intelligence. And I'll preview that my business partner, Jeremiah, is going to be talking more deeply about the technology around artificial intelligence and how to break it down. I'll be talking today about what are some of the implications of AI for all of you, for startups, and for blitzscaling in general. And I will do my best to get you out of here on time. I can see the time on the clock. And rest assured, I always finish on time. So as you heard from Ray, most of you probably know me because of the book Blitzscaling, which I wrote with my wonderful friend Reid Hoffman, incredible guy. What most people know about Reid is that he's the founder of LinkedIn. But what most people don't necessarily realize is that LinkedIn is one of the smaller successes that he's been associated with, right? He was a founding board member at PayPal. He was the first investor in Facebook, founded LinkedIn. He was the Series A investor in Airbnb, and he's a founding board member and one of the largest investors in OpenAI. And so over and over again, he has found a way to identify what is coming next. Like, I still remember in 2018 when he came to me and he said, "Chris, we've got the book out. Now I think it's time to go all in on artificial intelligence." And at the time, AI was not what it is today, right? It wasn't something that everyone was excited about, and yet Reid understood where things were going. Now the question is this a matter of luck? Is this a matter of intelligence? Is this a matter of approach? And so what we tried to do with blitzscaling is to codify how Reid actually makes his investing decisions. And by the way, here's a copy of the book Blitzscaling. I think I'd intended to give it to Ray on stage, but alas, I'd forgotten my copy. But let me put it here just for everyone to see. So thinking about the approach, the question is, how has Reid been so successful over time? In fact, how has Silicon Valley been so successful over time? And the answer, of course, is blitzscaling. So when you're an author, what you need to do is you need to make up a new word and trademark it, because that allows you to make a lot more money. It also allows you to put up Google alerts to know when people are talking about you. And the way we define blitzscaling is the pursuit of rapid growth by prioritizing speed over efficiency in the face of uncertainty. Now, rapid growth. How many people here in the audience would like to see their startup grow? Yeah, everyone likes rapid growth. But prioritizing speed over efficiency in the face of uncertainty, that sounds a little sketchy. In fact, that sounds risky. And the question becomes, why would you do that? Well, the answer is that there are times when the greatest risk is not taking enough risk. So I turn to the wisdom of the great philosopher Ricky Bobby from the Will Ferrell movie Talladega Nights. Any fans of Talladega Nights in the audience? Great. So, as you know, he has, besides Shake and Bake, a very famous saying he got from his father, which is, if you ain't first, you're last. And also, I want to go fast. And so the circumstances under which blitzscaling makes sense are when you are facing a Ricky Bobby market. Now, there are these necessary elements that need to be in place. And these may seem very familiar to you. Things like product market fit, a big market with high gross margins, the ability to scale your company. You need all of these to split scale successfully because there are companies that did not have these factors in place like WeWork, which famously crashed. But all these necessary elements just basically say you should only scale up a good business. You shouldn't scale up a bad business. But the two elements that are essential to blitzscaling that say this is one of those rare opportunities are the winner-take-most market and the distribution. Now, the winner-take-most market is what makes it if you ain't first or last. Usually, it's because of network effects, which means that as the number of nodes in the network grows, the value of the network to each individual user increases as well. You could think about something like a Facebook. The more people who use Facebook, the more valuable it becomes. Or something like Airbnb, where it's a two-sided marketplace. The more hosts there are, the more guests will go there. The more guests there are, the more valuable it is to each of the individual hosts. So that helps you identify the winner-take-most market. But just finding a winner-take-most market is not enough, because you still have to win that market. You still have to be the one who finishes first. And that's where the distribution and go-to-market comes in. You need to come up with a differentiated and scalable distribution and go-to-market strategy that will allow you to outgrow the competition. In consumer, it's often virality, where users produce more users. But elsewhere in different industries, you may need to find a way to tap into existing distribution networks. How many people in the audience use WhatsApp? Have used it today? Almost everyone. I know I've used it like 6 times since just arriving to the conference. WhatsApp is a great example of virality that taps into an existing network that nobody realized existed, the address book on your phone. And so if you have these things in place, that Ricky Bobby market, the ability to grow, and you're a good business, that's when you can blitzscale and build one of these $100 billion or even $1 trillion businesses. Now, what's really interesting is the impact that artificial intelligence is now having on everything. So I'm going to tell you a quick story about this book, Impromptu. This is a book that I helped read write, and we published it last year. It's all about the future of AI and humanity. In fact, you can download the book for free at impromptubook.com, and you can also buy it on Amazon. Generally, it's about 99 cents for the Kindle edition. It turns out Jeff Bezos doesn't like giving things away for free, so we couldn't give it away for free on Amazon, but you can get it for free on the website. Now, what is special about this particular book? Well, you may have noticed this is the first book that is co-authored with GPT-4. In January of 2023, I gathered with Reed and a number of other folks at an undisclosed location. And Reed said, "Guys, I have this question. Is it possible to write a book that we can put out there and publish about the future of AI by the time GPT-4 officially launches?" Which at the time was thought to be March 1st, turned out to be March 14th. And we concluded after this meeting that it was possible. And this book was actually written with the aid of GPT-4. We had special early access. And the book was completed in a single month. Right, the month of February 2023, wrote the entire book, and then got it produced in time for release on March 15th. Now, of course, I encourage you to go read the book. There's a lot of great ideas in the book. But the fact is, that's an example of how AI will change things. It's not just about being able to come up with a cool avatar for yourself. It's about things that produce real utility and real productivity. And I'm here to tell you, AI is going to be the biggest wave of our lifetimes. I've been around for the dot-com wave. I've been around for Web 2.0, the sharing economy. And this is going to be bigger than that. The only thing it compares to is the Industrial Revolution. If you look at global GDP per head, over time, it's basically flat. You know, you have sometimes a Roman Empire increases it. Sometimes you have a Black Plague decreases it. But ultimately, it was just hanging out until you get to around 1750 to 1800, and that's when it suddenly takes off. And GDP per head increased orders of magnitude during the Industrial Revolution. It's going to be hard to increase that much right now because we're operating from a much higher base, but we are probably looking at the greatest productivity increase that we'll see in our lifetimes. And that's because it can affect so much. The Industrial Revolution had this huge impact because it allowed us for the first time to replace human or animal muscle power with mechanical power. I mean, think about the car that you drove to get here today. Might have 200, 300 horsepower. Was that car smaller than a herd of 300 horses? Pretty sure it was. On the AI side, we're doing something similar, except now we are replacing or amplifying human brain power with computing power. A study came out 2 weeks ago about the legal industry. It said that for contract review, they had done a detailed study on using LLMs to do contract review, and they were able to increase productivity 300x. So one human could do 300 times as much work. That is a huge impact, and it's going to change so much. In some cases, it'll make industries grow bigger than ever before. In other cases, it will destroy all the incumbents. And the question becomes, in which situation do you find yourself? AI is going to be something that's going to require blitzscaling to succeed, right? We've already seen how OpenAI's incredible growth in the wake of the release of ChatGPT has positioned them to be a leader in the field. A revenue run rate of over $1 billion, a valuation approaching $100 billion. But that's just the first inning. That's just the first game. There are going to be so many more AI companies that come out, and in each case, it's likely to be a winner-take-most market. And that's because, as we've seen, the whole nature of AI, having these models that are able to then provide better results, which then gets more human feedback, which allows you to train at scale and improve the model, it's a feedback loop that tends to produce these winner-take-most markets. And the good news is it's still not too late, right? These winners are going to be crowned in the next 36 to 48 months, and there's still time to be one of them. Now, what we believe makes sense is to try to figure out for your AI opportunity, is it blitz scalable or not? And so remember those categories I said. Is it in a winner-take-most market? Do you have a distribution advantage? Do you have product market fit? Can you get a big market with high gross margins, and can you scale it up? We have our own methodology that we use for investing that looks at these factors and applies a certain formula. We have some exponential factors to privilege high scores. We have some weighting factors because, again, we believe that the winner-take-most market dynamic and the distribution are so much more important. But you can use these ideas however you like. If you want to create your own scale, you're welcome to do that as well. But I encourage you to think explicitly about, is this opportunity blitz scalable when it comes to AI? And the other thing I want you to think about is how you create the value in artificial intelligence. So how many people here, and don't worry, I'm not going to embarrass you. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to. How many people here were involved in the Web3 industry? Few folks, right? And it's okay. If you don't want to raise your hand, that's all right. Now, I happen to think that there's still a lot of excitement in Web3. Hey, Bitcoin's back, right? But I think that the flaw in the first wave of Web3 is that it was very difficult to see how value is being created. When people brought me these different deals and they said, oh my God, you got to get into this and let's buy these NFTs, I would say, I want to ask a question. If tomorrow, a law was passed that said you could not sell one of these things for more than you paid, would anyone still buy them? The answer at that point was largely no. But there is value being created. We've done Web3 investments where there's real value being created for the users. The same thing is going to be true for artificial intelligence. Now, it's very cool to be able to develop a neat avatar for your Twitter profile. But you know what's more interesting? Creating real value. So how do you create value? You can only create value in four different ways. You can make something faster, you can make it better, you can make it cheaper, or you can make something new that didn't exist before. And so as you're trying to figure out how to apply that AI technology, you got to ask yourself, hey, is there a qualitative difference? Does AI allow my business or my customers to do something that humans couldn't do before? Or does it allow us to exceed maximum human quality? And there's quantitative. How much does AI amplify human productivity? I just told you, in contract review, that factor is 300x. And this is one of the things that makes AI investing difficult. So throughout history, in venture capital, there's always been this principle of the 10x product. How many people have heard someone talk about a 10x product before? The notion is, if the product is 10 times as good as the incumbent, then you're going to be able to turn over the market. You'll get people to adopt this new thing because it's so much better. But in AI, there's going to be so many applications that are 10x, 20x, 30x. You have to look much more closely at the competition to understand, hey, I just found a product that's a 10x product, but there's a competitor that's a 300x product. Should I invest? Obviously not. So think very carefully about that competitive set. And then where does the value come from? So in AI, I always tell people, again, very simple. There's just a couple of places where you can add that value. There's value on the input side. One of the things I like to tell people is that AI is not a genie. It's not magic. It seems magical sometimes, but it's not magic. You can't tell ChatGPT, make my life better, and expect it to do something. So there's real value that you can add to AI on the input side by understanding business problems, by having access to proprietary data, to having something that allows you to feed better information into the AI process. Of course, you can add value at the process layer. You could have your own model. You could fine-tune a model. There's all sorts of things you could do to add value there. But you can also add value at the output side. So on the output side, there's no rule that says you have to take whatever AI gives you and just serve it up to people. So here's an example. I've used AI to help me in my speaking engagements, not to write what I say to you guys, but rather to create some additional stuff. So last year, I actually created a special guide to blitzscaling in the MENA region. That sounds interesting, right? How did I do it? I used GPT-4. I had a whole series of queries to draw in this raw material, and then I converted that into a document, a 5,000-word piece that took me 90 minutes to complete. Could never have done that before. It doesn't make sense for a speaker to create a completely new 5,000-word piece for a speaking engagement unless they have AI to do it. But I didn't just take the raw output and push it out. I actually went through, made sure it made sense, made sure it was written in my voice. And that's why you can still add value on the output side, maybe with humans, maybe with other models, maybe with other forms of technology. But if you're able to create value, then you can build a great AI business or you can invest in a great AI business. The big question I asked earlier, however, is what happens to my industry? Is it going to be crushed or is it going to be lifted up? Well, there are two questions you have to ask. The first question is, how much can AI amplify or replace human brain power? The greater the amplification, the greater the replacement value, the greater the magnitude of the change to your industry, whether good or bad. And that's why something like legal services could be seeing a big impact. But again, you don't necessarily know whether it's a positive impact or a negative impact. That's where the next question comes in. How elastic is the demand curve? And what I mean by demand curves, I want you to think back to your high school education and economics. You have a supply curve that shows how much people are willing to supply at any given price. You have a demand curve that shows how much people are willing to buy at any given price. If a demand curve is inelastic, AI is going to crush that industry. So I apologize in advance to anybody in the room who is in the law and legal services. That is an industry which is going to be crushed in so many ways. Some people may be celebrating this. Again, feel badly. I have nothing against lawyers. But when legal services are less expensive, do you run out and buy a lot more law? Let's say contract review, the prices decline by a factor of 300. The price of contract review is now 0.003 times. Are you going to do 500 times as much contract review? You might do double, but you're still going to see a massive decrease, probably a 99% plus decrease in the revenues of that industry. On the other hand, if the demand curve is elastic, if the price decline causes the volume to increase more than the price decline, then you could be an industry that's going to be growing. So paradoxically, a lot of people are worried about the entertainment industry. They're like, oh my God, AI is going to come along and crush the entertainment industry. I don't think so. Because my observation is I grew up in a world where there were like three channels. I see some gray hair in the audience. You guys remember this, right? Three channels on a television. Somehow we still watched it a lot. And then there were 50 channels. And there were 500 channels. And now we have 5,000 streaming services, it seems. And yet you still can't find something to watch. Your demand for it just continues to grow and grow. I think that AI in the future will be used to create personalized entertainment experiences for all of us. I think that you might be in your Uber and you might say, oh, it's going to take me 24 minutes to get downtown. Great. Give me 24 minutes of content on this topic that I'm interested in and generate it on the spot for me right now. That means that the entertainment industry will actually increase in size because there will be so much more. All of a sudden, if you like a blockbuster movie, if you really love Top Gun Maverick, you can get additional Top Gun Maverick licensed from the studio or whoever the IP holder is as much as you want. So final thoughts. I want to leave you guys with some specifics on how to use AI in your businesses. And again, this is for right now. 2 years from now, this could be very different. The rules are always changing. First, think of AI as a smart undergrad research assistant. It knows everything but understands nothing. You wouldn't take your undergrad intern and say, give me a research report and then turn it into your board of directors, right? So make sure you use AI. It's incredible because it can produce these results instantaneously, doesn't cost you much money, and never ever breaks up with its boyfriend or girlfriend and has to be consoled. But use it for what it is. Secondly, think of yourself as a movie director. So this actually came from one of Reed's friends who was an executive producer of The Daily Show. Brilliant insight. When you have AI, the first result may not be the best. In fact, like a movie director, you may have to coax different things out of it. You might say, like a movie director, hey, give me a little more energy. Take it up a little bit. Okay, too much. Take it down. All right, make me feel this. Same thing with AI. As you're prompting it, try different variations, and you might even pull together different elements from different responses to get the right response. And then finally, just do it. Don't debate about it. Oftentimes people debate, should I use AI for this? Should I not use AI? It's practically free. Just use it, see what happens, and decide afterwards. Usually you'll spend more time debating than you will doing. And one final insight for all the entrepreneurs out there, let humans be human. Let AI be AI. Like instantly, there's something about AI and how evocative and sexy it is that makes us think, hey, I want to use AI to create a new Star Wars sequel. I'm like, that's not a good use of AI. Human beings are much better at that. In fact, what AI is great at is stuff that's data intensive, routine, and tedious. So go out and find those boring industries that hopefully you have some experience in and figure out how AI is going to be applied. I've been telling audiences, I think 2024 is the year of AI utility. It's the year where we go from thinking, wow, this is really cool, to saying, how do we use this to take all of the friction out of our lives? How do we use this to make our businesses much more productive? So I promised I would end on time. I'm going to keep my promise. I see Paul out there. So what I want to invite you guys to do is please feel free to follow me. Feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. Ask me any questions you like. It's been so awesome to be here at STEP for the first time. Thank you, Ray, and thank you, everyone else, for inviting me here.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at STEP Conference, and let's stay in touch.